Welcome back to the Real Life Moms Podcast. This is a place where you could take a break from parenting and the chaos of your day-to-day and take time to focus on yourself. I'm Lisa Foster, your host, and today we are discussing how to break out of the chaos when you are faced with extraordinary demands. And I'm here with fellow mom, Kelly Coleman, who is a featured film development executive turned author. Her book is Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, your guide to the essential systems, services, and supports, which stems from her own parenting experience. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. And also in this moment in my life when I'm like, I need like a calming moment, escape from all the things. And I was so thrilled this was on the podcast. Because I'm like, this moment is exactly what you're talking about. So anybody else who's feeling that, like, we are right there with you.
Awesome. Yes. This is the time that you can just breathe and like, just fill your bucket with something positive. That is my hope.
Yes. Yes. And especially as humans, as parents, as moms, all of these things, there is always going to be a lot that is being thrown at us. And as we all know, it's not necessarily as easy as, oh, just don't do the things. You still got to do the things. It's just a matter of figuring out how to make it all manageable.
And you are providing so many resources for so many people. So I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, but also about the passion behind this book you have right behind you. I see it on your stand. Oh, yes. You have a few of them.
I do. I just got that box from my publisher. And I was like, there's no way I'm not putting these right next to me.
Totally. But
if I move my elbow, it all goes away.
Well, that's kind of like life, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We have our perfect stacks of everything. And your elbow goes the wrong direction. You're like, everything falls apart, which is a great metaphor. I love that. So yes, as you said, I'm a mom. I'm an author. I'm an advocate. I'm chauffeur, barber, chef, all these things for my children, which is a blast, but it's a lot. And my previous career, I was getting paid to come up with ideas for talking animal movies, which is awesome, but also means I have no real world skills. So there's that. I have two amazing kids. My older son, Sean, is 12 years old. My younger son, Aaron, is 10. They are best friends. They're hilarious. They're each their own weird, unique, wonderful guys. Aaron, to add to his uniqueness, has multiple disabilities, including a yet undiagnosed genetic syndrome. And within that, his subdiagnoses include cerebral palsy, microcephaly, autism, epilepsy, cortical vision impairment, feeding tube, sensory processing, gross motor, fine motor, cognitive, behavioral, like, he's an overachiever. And he's like, I'm just going to check all those boxes. Cool. Okay. So in the spirit of the swirl and your elbow moves and everything gets knocked over, I feel like we're just like knocking things over all day long. And my kids are amazing, but the caregiving piece is real and it is a job. Mm-hmm. And he's 10 years old and it has taken me a decade to figure out, you know, how to get that reimbursement from the insurance company, how to do a financial plan for a child who will never be fully independent. What the heck is going on with all the school and the paperwork and the documents and the meetings? What to ask the specialist when we're going in for appointments? All of these different things and more. And I've come to realize as I've talked to more and more families and moms, especially over the years, we all go into this pretty much knowing nothing about any of this. We have to all build many of the exact same systems and we're all reinventing the same wheels. And in thinking about that, I realized it was like, I have wasted such a colossal amount of time and money and energy doing these things that other people have already done and figured out. And that's not okay. And, you know, of the many confluence of events that prompted me to finally write this book, it's that there's no handbook for like, hey, here's how to be a caregiver. And because of that, we are all handling all of the emotion that comes with having a child with a disability, diagnosed or not. And the job of caregiving, plus the parenting piece, when we all just want to, like, we just want to hang out with our kids and watch airplanes, which I do for like an hour every day because it's awesome. And that's what my kid likes. So I really, my great hope is that we as parent caregivers can stop reinventing the same wheels and save each other that time and money and stress. And I know you talk so much about, like, let's look at the chaos and how we can step away from the chaos for a
Yes.
And the paperwork and the planning, like, that is chaos because it's never fun and it always sits on the to-do list because nobody wants to do it. But there's actually a better way to do everything.
As a pediatric physical therapist, I see a lot of families struggling with exactly what you're saying, like not knowing the information, not knowing how to handle all the paperwork, not even understanding the meetings they're honestly sitting in for, like IEPs and things like that. And I'll be honest, I'm a pediatric PT, is one of my hats, and I don't even know all those answers. Like, people come to me and ask questions, and the best advice that I get to give are definitely from parents who have been through it. Like, they get it. They've, like, kind of mastered what they know. They have the best resources. So I love that you put together a book because you're a parent who has been through it, and it's just so valuable.
Thank you. Well, and there are so many terrific books out there that are these beautiful memoirs, and you're like, I can connect with this person. There are so many great books about how to parent this situation or this challenge. There's not a book of, like, how to do the stuff and the paperwork and the planning. And even just as you were saying all of that, which I so appreciate you sharing, because as a therapist, I'm certain you've seen a huge range of families and kids and disabilities. I felt like for so many years, it wasn't that, oh, I don't have the answers. It was that I didn't even know the questions to ask. And so my book is, yes, there are personal stories, there are letters from fellow parents, but there's also, here are the basics of what you need to know about all the different topics. The basics, there are checklists and templates, there are interviews with experts and bullet points of what worked for me, what questions to ask yourself, and where do you start? Because most of this has just been sitting on my computer for years and, like, oh, I'll send it to a friend who's going to do a school visit. Oh, here's my 4-page worksheet that I fill up, print out and fill out every time I do a school visit, so that I go home and I can compare. And if we're arguing for a different school or if our lawyer is doing so, we have the objective facts right in front of us. It took me a long time to put together that worksheet. Like, nobody else should have to put together a worksheet. Like, just check that off your list.
Yeah, everyone's trying to figure out or take the time to do that. Yeah. Now, you mentioned, like, all the hats, the demands of being that caregiver. You also want to be mom. I can imagine just being in it. It's like a full-time job. Parenting is a full-time job, right? Like, that alone is a full-time job. Then your job is also taking care of your child's needs too, in a different caregiving way, right? And so my question is, how do you even find yourself? How do you find yourself, your time to breathe in this chaos for you?
I love that question, because whether or not we have kids with disabilities, we need to think about this. And whatever your hard thing is, it's your hard thing. My hard thing might be epilepsy. My hard thing might be I am cleaning vomit out of my hair all night. It might be I'm trying to teach my 10-year-old to communicate when he doesn't speak with words. First of all, just own that your hard thing is hard, and not comparing it to somebody else's and saying, oh, well, my kid doesn't have a feeding tube, so I guess I don't have it as hard. Like, your hard is your hard. And for me, I would get so frustrated for so long when people would say, oh, I'm worried about you, you should take a yoga class. And I'm like, I don't want to take a yoga class. I'm just going to cry, and everybody next to me is going to be like 20 something and bendy and going to brunch after this, and in their matching thing. And I'm just like, I just can't. And what I have found is that I need myself to build a foundation before I can go to the yoga class or go to lunch with a friend or whatever the thing is, I need to view the stuff, the paperwork, the planning, the caregiving stuff as like, that is a job. And I've set up systems so that everything can and will get done so that that to-do list doesn't give me anxiety. I know it's never going to disappear. This job for me and with my son's support needs, this job is forever. And so I've really chosen to look at all of the stuff as this is a job, and many people have that in addition to a full-time job outside of the home, in addition to parenting full-time, and it's a lot. But I took a step back for a very long time. Instead of saying, I'm going to force myself to go to the yoga class I don't want to go to, I've said, what do I need so that I want to and I am excited to go to the yoga class, go for a long walk, go and wander through Target for a really long time? Sometimes that is self-care because Target is lovely. But for me, having a place for all of the stuff allows me to close that chapter for the day or for the afternoon or whatever, and to walk away from it because I feel like I know where to pick up and I'm not letting it reach the point of overwhelm. Otherwise, I need to attack that because walking through Target will be stressful for me, and it should never be stressful to walk through Target.
I think that's beautiful that you have created a space. I think everyone should do this, you know, no matter who your children are, really. Yeah. But a place to shut it down, like yeah. A time to shut it down. Like, we all have these to-do lists, some more than others, but it could be looping in our heads and looping in our lives over and over unless we give it like a shutdown time.
Yes. And I literally schedule time for things. And that includes people like, how'd you write a book? How do you have time for that?
Yeah.
The answer is very slowly because I literally scheduled time on my calendar. I did not pick up my phone. I did not answer emails. And I was working during that time. And I couldn't just sit and write a book in a couple of weeks. I need months and months to do it. But I am confident there was never a doubt if I would get it done because I gave that a place on the schedule. And I really always try to have a deep sense of what are my priorities right now. My priority right now might not be I'm going to go running every morning because I'm really excited about doing all of the book things and also about hanging out with my kids. And I rescheduled some stuff yesterday because I just wanted to have a dance party with my kids. And the kid who flicks the lights, he's flicking the lights. And we're listening to the DuckTales theme over and over. And that's our dance party. And that's the priority because all of this parenting, everything, for me, that's what it's about, are these moments and the fun of it. And if you don't lean into the fun and sometimes seek out that fun, because there's a lot that's overwhelming, then you're missing the fun in favor of checking your emails, which is just kind of a bummer.
Time flies. And yes, we miss the moments. I mean, even tonight, I had 100 things to do before getting on with you, which I'm so excited to be here. But yeah, I worked. I had a meeting after work that I went to. I had to get the kids, like, I didn't have anything in the fridge, I'll be honest, like, yep. Didn't have anything and I wasn't going to bring in. So I was like, I want hot dogs and baked beans. Like, let's camp tonight, guys. And all I could think of is like, why don't I have hot dogs and baked beans like all the time? Because it was so good, but that's it was easy. Amazing. It was fun and it was not healthy, but it was yummy.
Well, and also, like, what is your priority? If your priority is to, like, we are going to eat so much kale tonight because that is healthy, then you will go to the store and bring your kids with you and you will get kale and you will watch them frown as they eat it. And you'll be like, this is great because kale's the priority. But if the priority is, I want to get us fed, I want to make this as easy as possible, and I want to have fun, it's okay to choose easy. And I think as parents, we don't choose easy often enough. it's so easy to feel like, well, this person on Instagram made this bento box in the shape of the characters from this book, and I need no, like, hot dogs and baked beans.
Yes. And we all sat together because we had time. Because if I would have had to make something, then someone had to go to dance and someone had to go, everyone had to go somewhere, right? And we had time. I mean, it took me, what, 10 minutes to make hot dogs and baked beans? But we had 20 minutes to sit and eat. And that was really nice. Now, you mentioned that, you know, with your child, it's a lifetime of care. This is not, you know, turns 18, see ya, have a good day, right? So how do you prepare yourself for that? Because I know just even as parents, it's like 18 sounds like the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, it's like, oh, there's the light and then life will begin again and they'll be independent, but that's not everybody. So how does that feel? How do you kind of support yourself through that part?
Thank you. I appreciate you acknowledging that. It is something that my son is 10. He will never be fully independent. He will never just go off to college by himself. He will never just get his own place. And that's okay, because that's his path. If I were to say I've found some magical solution to make it all okay and make it not overwhelming at all, I would be thinking. The thing that I didn't realize in the beginning of this journey is that what gets you through all of the stuff is falling in love with your kid, not just because they're your kids, so of course you love them, but because of who they are. I don't have all the answers for the future, including with his development and what his cognitive abilities will be, what his communication abilities will be, what his interests, his different ways he will contribute, like all of these things. At 10, he has so many question marks. We're looking into all of the options for housing and successor guardians and family and like all of the things. If he outlives us, which statistically, that's generally what happens, we've looked into all of the options and we feel like we have a few things that can work and things that we have written into our future care plans if we are not here before he becomes an adult. But the reality is I've made peace with the uncertainty of it. And the reality that even if I live to be 150 years old and I outlive him, I will not be as physically strong. Hopefully I will always be as mentally strong as I am today. And even today, there are some times when he needs to be physically lifted and carried, and I can't do that. He weighs well more than half of what I weigh, and I'm not physically able to do that. So also being very realistic about what are my limitations and knowing that my husband and I will need to consider accommodations for if he's still in diapers when he's 60, we need to be sure that we have supports in place if we are not able to physically manage that. So it's a lot, and I try not to have too much anxiety about it because you can make yourself bananas, but I really focus on the day-to-day of we have a general plan for the future, and like, he's awesome. Like he's fun, and he makes me laugh, and he wants hugs, and he wants to take the dog for a walk. Okay. Oh, we'll do that again.
And I hear that there's a lot of planning. And I think in general, people don't think about that planning so early on. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is also in your book too, maybe how to plan for things like this mm-hmm. earlier, because I know there are programs out there that you kind of have to get on lists much earlier than you ever even imagine.
Many years in advance, and all parents, like as soon as you know you are going to have a baby, we all do the like, we're making a baby registry and we're visiting the stores and this blanket's so soft and look at this swaddle and like all the things. What we should actually do before the baby even comes is we should put a will in place.
I know.
And why don't we do that?
And because then we're afraid of our own death is what it is. Yes.
And we need to talk about that. So If we look at statistics, the two of us each have a 100% chance of dying. This shouldn't be depressing. This shouldn't be something we avoid. It's just science. That's how everything works. And we spend so much time avoiding thinking about that, that we are missing an opportunity to empower our children in the future, disabled or not.
Mm-hmm.
We need to think about a future care plan for all of our children that hopefully we will never have to enact. But I think if everyone had in place the elements of their will, and that's kind of the bare minimum what anybody, anyone, but especially families who have kids with disabilities should have in place,
mm-hmm.
is have a will so that when the time comes, and if you're not there, especially unexpectedly, there's a plan in place so that you are empowering them to follow your wishes and also to be supported in living their best lives.
Yeah, I know. We did not do a will until, oh gosh, I think our kids were like, you know, maybe fifth or sixth grade. It was old, like, thank goodness, right? And there are very simple ones, just FYI, not to turn dark here, but there are very simple ones even online that you can just fill out, at least tell people where your kids are going.
But exactly.
Because that is important. Yeah.
Yes. And so that there's not family members coming out of the woodwork trying to sift through your affairs and your jewelry and stuff. By the way, I have no jewelry.
I was going to say, the only thing I cared about was my kids. Like, where are they going? Everything exactly. else is up for grabs.
But any money, is somebody trying to grab money that you're like, no, that goes to the kids. It's actually not depressing because we should all do it. And if we all talked about it, it wouldn't seem depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found, as has everyone else I've talked to, it's intimidating until you actually do it. And then once you're doing it, you're just like, you know what? I checked that off of my list.
Good. It's a relief. Yeah, it's a relief.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So brighter and lighter things. Okay. So from your research, you've done so much research on this book. You have so many resources in your book. What do you want, like, every mom to know? What is one, like, outstanding, besides the will, every mom should know?
Every human should know this. And the fact that I had to learn this on my journey, especially as I was writing this book, is kind of unconscionable. And it's embarrassing to say out loud, but learn about disability from disabled people. It seems like that should be the standard, but weirdly, it's not. Disability seems so scary because the vast majority of us are not in community with disabled people. You know, disabled people, their disabilities might not be visible. They might not feel comfortable sharing that information with you. Many disabilities are not visible. But following organizations and individuals on social media teaches you about disability. You learn that, oh, some of this medical stuff can be scary. Oh, but you're in a wheelchair and you're a two-time White House appointee and you have this awesome career and, oh, okay, wheelchairs are not so scary after all. Whatever it is that you learn, it takes so much of the fear and stigma and all the things out of it whenever you are learning about it from the people with the lived experience.
That is beautiful. And it's funny because, you know, I work with a lot of kids and kids will ask kids. They'll just be like, hey, what's that for? Hey, what's going on with you? You know, like, just, and they're willing to express and talk. And it's like beautiful. But adults, yeah, they don't ask the questions.
No. Adults. And I think so many adults grew up at a time in our generation, we are trying to outrun this, of when it comes to disability, we were taught, oh, don't stare. Don't look at that person. Just ignore them.
No one wants to be ignored. That's like the worst.
And also, I have a kiddo who is very literally loud and proud with his disability, and he makes a lot of sound, and he does look visibly different than the other humans in the room. Don't pretend you don't see him. I know you see him. Like, it's not a secret. Don't pretend you don't notice his disability. Like, of course you do. Be genuinely curious about other humans And they're going to be curious about you. If you're asking my kid about his feeding tube, great. Ask him about his feeding tube. And we might ask you about your sandwich because we might be like, that's a weird sandwich.
Is there a question, just as a parent maybe, because since your son's not like on the podcast, but is there a question that you wish parents or kids would ask?
Can I buy you coffee? The answer
is, oh my
yes.
God, me too.
I'm done. Yes, the answer is always yes. Was a specific question? I think that really varies depending on the situation. And the question I guess to overall answer this that people should ask is the thing that they're wondering about in their mind and wanting to ask about. Ask that thing, but ask that thing in a way that doesn't make you sound like a jerk and doesn't make you sound ignorant. And it's okay to say, for example, hey, I'm curious about that tube in your kid's stomach and what's that all about? It's so different than, whoa, what's that? Or blah, or don't stare at that. Ask the questions, but think about how you ask them. If you approach a stranger and say, what's wrong with you because of their physical disability? No, just don't do that ever.
Right. And also, I guess, going back to like, how would you want someone to ask something about you?
Yes. Yes. And someone's disability is their personal medical information.
Yes.
So do you want someone saying like, hey, when was the last time you had a UTI? No, it's none of their business. And also, as you mentioned, my son isn't here. We've discussed all of the things that I speak about publicly. There are many things I don't speak about publicly for all parents. Thinking about consent with our children, and especially with our children who are complex communicators, whose communication is emerging. There are things about our lives that I think is appropriate to be private. My child's life is not content for others to consume. And I don't want my kids to become teenagers and hate me because I was telling these hilarious stories that are actually kind of embarrassing for them.
Yes, I agree. So what would you like to tell the listeners? So what would be one actionable step that they can kind of walk away with and start doing as soon as they turn off this podcast?
Yes. So first, just validate if you are feeling like, I am so overwhelmed by this, because yes, that is true. And you will be. And there is no way to like get past all of that. So validate that and then look at your giant stack of post-it notes and scraps of paper and emails and things. You will have so much to do, and that's not, the volume of stuff is not going to go away. But what you can do to get started is just choose one thing and choose the easy thing. Choose a thing where you feel like you can get a victory that you can see pretty quickly. Maybe that is emailing your child's teacher and saying, hey, I wanted to check when my child is receiving their therapies during the school week. That gives you information. If it is putting on your calendar for January of every year, like I do, to email your assistant principal to schedule your IEP meeting so that you can get the date that works for you a couple months later, put that on your calendar as a recurring thing for every single year. It alleviates so much stress down the road when you're able to put systems in place, but don't try and tackle all the thing at once. Break it down into the smallest steps you can and do the easy things, because those wins will add up. And then when you're tackling the things that are more challenging, you're like, oh, I've got this already. I'm good.
That is perfect. I love that. Well, where can the listeners find you and your book?
So my book is available to order at all the book places, Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, independent booksellers. And my website has all my social media and everything. And it's kellycoleman.com. And that's K-E-L-L-E-Y Coleman.com.
And I can have a link in the show notes as well, so people can just grab it from either your website or maybe one of the other sites as well.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for coming on and talking to me today. You are so much fun, and you just have a great vibe about you. So it's just so lovely to be around you.
Thank you so much. I love the community that you're creating and just this space for people to take a break with all the things. So I appreciate all that you are doing.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. Don't forget to grab your copy of Kelly's book. The link is in the show notes. And until next week, keep making this time for yourself because you matter.